Thank you for listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast. Hope you enjoy it. It's brought to you by Lakewood Chev. If you're looking for something unique, Lakewood has a large selection of special edition trucks by Chevrolet. Life is too short not to be special. Check them out at Lakewood Chev. Dan Bass joins us. Dan, welcome to the show. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, now, what happened earlier on when you got, do you remember who you got traded for from Toronto to Calgary?
Toronto and Calgary was Reggie Lewis. I believe at time he was highly touted defensive end or whatever.
Yep.
And it was just, it's funny. The first time I ever came out to the West, I said, man, if I ever got traded, this would be the place I'd like to come. And it wasn't probably 2 weeks later. Careful what you wish for. It turned out great. I'm not complaining with that. You know.
Well, you had a great few years in Calgary. You were an all-star twice, and then you moved to the rivalry. Was it difficult for you that first time? Like, man, back the Battle of Alberta back then, Calgary Edmonton was a war, right? How difficult was it as a guy at such a physical position, or was it easy to switch?
You just wanted to play against games like that. Growing up at Michigan, at Michigan State, going against Notre Dame, Ohio State. Same thing, you know, playing for Calgary, playing the Eskimos, you like playing against those rivalry games. And when I got traded up here, there was nobody more that I loved to play. A, it was a rivalry game, and they were my old teammates. So you put that in the back of your mind just to give you a little bit of extra gas during the game. And, it's just you need a little bit of a motivator every now and then.
Now, I want to talk football with you, but also it's fitting because people might not remember when you were inducted in the CFL Hall of Fame, you also went in the same year, guys like Grover Covington, James Murphy, Dave Ramey, and a guy you knew quite well in Hugh Campbell, who was in. Yeah. And as a player, now maybe times have changed the relationships, but, you know, Hugh was different because he was a coach and the GM. And I asked the question because Edmonton just hired a new general manager. How important do you feel the relationship player to GM is in the CFL?
Well, today I wouldn't know because I'm not there, but I know when I played, that's a huge, it's going to be like a whole family. You know, it's like, it was hard for me to explain when I got traded up here to the Eskimos. I knew I was good enough. A lot of it was, would I fit into the Eskimos' way? Would I fit into the Eskimo locker room? That was my biggest fear. And I think a lot of that, you look at any teams that have great success, they all have that little bit of that format. It doesn't matter how good you are. It's, are you going to be accepted and you won't, you know, to play the Eskimo way? And I was more than happy to do that.
How quickly did you realize what the Eskimo way was and what did you do to adapt to it, if anything?
Didn't change much. You got that right off the bat. It's just like I always said, when a rookie's trying out, a veteran has to take that person under his wing and try and show him the ways of how we do things. And when I got traded from Calgary to the Eskimos, Tommy Towns, Dave Cutler, those guys were there just to kind of pull me in. And because I was kind of that 4-5 year veteran, I was probably the only veteran on the team that's 4 or 5 years. They either had the young guys or they had the very old guys. So they just kind of took me under and showed me the way, and it was very easy. You always have to have that help.
Dan Bass joins us, a CFL Hall of Famer. And now the GM, you know, he signs you or trades for you, what have you, but like how much, and I guess maybe it's different because Hugh was the coach, so you're talking to him on a regular basis. And then he actually left, right? He went to Houston for a bit. So when you have, like, is the GM relationship when he's not the coach that important during the season to a player, or is it just more important at contract time?
Probably more, I mean, at contract time, because obviously he has to like you. In other words, you're not going to get a new contract. But, I mean, I think that's the approach that the head coach and the GM have to have, that they look at it and say, yeah, this is the person that fits within our mold, and this is the one that, you know, we want to be with our organization. And if you do those things, you can play a long time.
Do you watch the games closely now?
I try to, but the game has changed quite a bit. I try and watch, you know, there's certain players, and I got this from fans that I've talked to, because I struggled a little bit when I first tried watching the game because I was always trying to figure out what teams were doing. And I asked them, and they said, you know what, they have a couple players they like to watch on defense, a couple players they like to watch on offense, and that's what they do. And I find that's way better for me to try and do. is watch certain players, because I can see how well they reacted to a play, and I know they studied film. You know, that gentleman or the player had he anticipated what that play was going to be before the ball was even snapped.
Now, interesting, you said it was tough because you would spend more time trying to figure out what type of defense or scheme they're playing rather than watch the play unfold. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's just hard because, you know, as being a linebacker, mm-hmm. our number one thing was you see a formation, you had your tendencies, you know what they like to do on that particular play. So that's what I'm trying to watch and going, okay, they line up in this formation, they're going to run this, and things have changed. And there's a lot more different formations. The way, you know, like when I played at the end of my career, I think the shuffle pass was becoming a big thing. I would have loved to play against that shuffle pass because the idea of it is to try and take that play away so they'll never run it again.
So now the way you could hit was a lot different, right, when you played compared to now. As a guy who played in that era, is it better change or is it tough to kind of say, man, I wish that guy would just pop him?
We did some things that were legal back then that if we did it today, you'd probably be thrown out of the game. like a middle linebacker, we played one game against BC. They ran a certain pattern that they were hurting certain teams with, and the coach comes up and says, Dan, when that guy comes across your area, you light him up. You have to let him know that you're going to be there. And lo and behold, this guy came across, and it was kind of a headshot right to the ear hole. Down he goes, but we sent the message. They never ran that play again because they knew if you're going to come across that middle, you're going to get hit, where today you couldn't do that.
It is definitely a different time. And so maybe the game has, become a little, I think it's safe to say probably safer in that aspect as a good guy delivering those ear hole shots. Sometimes you put yourself in that position, you're delivering the hard shot. You know, you could get injured just as easily, right?
Well, absolutely. And we always said that's part of it. We call it a radar or whatever. A lot of times you know when something's coming. But sometimes, as a player, you will get caught in a certain position where you just got to take the hit. But the idea of it is they got better helmets today, better. They are looking after the players, which is a good thing. Because as players, you never wanted to put a guy out of the game. If it was a good, clean hit, that was fine. But you never wanted to do a cheap shot to put a guy out of the game because it could happen to you. And if you get known around the league like that, there will be somebody that will go hunting for you.
Dan Bass, CFL Hall of Famer, is the Eskimos Wall of Honor inductee in 1992. Of course, was a Defensive Player of the Year, won a Grey Cup in 1987, was also on the losing 1990 Grey Cup team, outstanding linebacker, I think All-Canadian five or seven times in his career. Dan, now, when you watch the games, are you automatically, do you pick a linebacker from each team, and is that the position you're still watching the most?
Oh, yeah. No question. I try to watch something else, and I can't. it's just hard. It's something you've done all your life. And, when I was done playing, I, helped coach my son and some of his football teams. Mm-hmm. And I was always a linebacker coach and watching film, and it was always through the eyes of a linebacker. And it's just hard to get away from.
Now, I know you coached your son's team. Were you ever contemplating, coaching in the CFL or CIS or junior football at all at any point?
At one time, I thought maybe when I was done playing football, that's what I would get into. But then, you have kids and you realize if you're going to coach, you are going to move around the country quite a bit. And I just kind of more or less decided that was not what I wanted to do. And I had an opportunity to get in the car business and I chose to do that instead.
Now you're a car salesman at Lakewood Chev on the south side. How often when somebody comes in to buy a car do they ask you about football?
Oh, quite a bit. I mean, there's and I've realized there's a lot of Saskatchewan Rough Rider fans in Alberta throughout the year, and I've had to put a few of their Saskatchewan stickers on their cars, a little bit crooked, but I do it just because it's great for the league. It doesn't matter who you're cheering for as long as you're cheering for somebody in the CFL.
Now, you've been doing car sales for how long?
Oh, geez, I've been doing it since 1984.
What? So when you played, you were doing it as well.
I not necessarily when I played, but during the off season, I would do it. It was something, you know, to get away from football a little bit, and I enjoyed it. And I was, like I said, and then the time came when I retired, I had an opportunity to move in and become a manager and become a and I haven't looked back since then.
Now, as a manager in car sales, are you like a motivational speaker guy? Like, do you have the coach's persona there? Are you directing plays? How's that working?
It's pretty well like that. It's the coach's play. You know, like there's certain ways you want things to be done, just like the coach. It's easier for your salesman to follow things. They're not guessing, oh, how would we do this? If everybody's on the same page, it makes things way easier. And that's part of our experience at Lakewood is we want it to be the best experience you ever had buying a car.
Now, Dan, going back to football quickly, when you won the Grey Cup in 1987, Jackie Parker started the season as the head coach and then was replaced by Joe Farragelli. Talk about maybe the first meeting with Joe and what he said to you guys and how that got your team turned around and headed in the right direction.
Well, we had a pretty good team as it was, but I think basically what happened is we really – it's not we didn't respect both coaches, but Jackie Parker was Jackie Parker. And seeing him leave because of health reasons, we knew we had to, we wanted to win the Grey Cup for him. That was my thing, is and I love playing for Jackie. And as a player, you always need a little bit of motivation.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. You know, Joe came in, did some things. Joe was a good guy, but I remember, you know, it was sad to see somebody go down for health reasons, and that was my motivator. We need to win one for Jackie.
Now, Mike Roach was your linebacker coach, I think, in 87, right? As a guy who coached linebackers, what did you find was the best attribute a linebacker coach could have?
It's hard to explain, but I've had actually Mike was when I was in Calgary, and then he came up here with the Eskimos. But a lot of it was they understand that every athlete is going to see something different when you're out on the field. And part of it is how do you train, you know, a linebacker that you have to do this if he can't recognize or he's not seeing the play develop. And that just comes from experience. And I was very fortunate to have good coaches throughout my college career and then in the pros that you know what to look for. And it just makes things a lot quicker because basically being a middle linebacker, you're kind of the quarterback on the defense. So when something happens, guys are looking for you to say, okay, are we going to stay in this play or are we going to bail out and check down to something different?
Yeah, and not only do you have to be physical as a middle linebacker, you also have to be, I think, very cerebral. Like, you look at a guy like J.C. Sherrod, who's not overly big, but a very sound tackler, and you know, gets by nowadays on a lot of experience and knowing what to expect.
Exactly, and he's the guy that I like to watch when I watch a game because I watched him the first year he was in the league, and he made one hell of a play, and I'm looking and I watched it. They showed the replay, and I'm going, okay, this kid sees the game that I would see it. There was something that tipped him off because it was a quick developing play, and he actually got in there and got underneath the pulling guard and made a hell of a play. And you got to give your hat off to the guys like that because they take the time, they study the film, they know in order to make this play, you have to take a gamble, and he shot the gap and made a hell of a play.
Dan, great catching up with you. I think we're going to talk to you. I want to get some linebacking questions once we get into the CFL season this summer, so I might be Ben and Yur again. And in the meantime, Eskimo fans can come see you at the Lakewood Chev on 34th Ave, right, on 91st Street on the south side?
That would be perfect.
Perfect. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
All righty. Thank you.